Here we go. All right. Parashat Lech Lecha. Fantastic. The 2,000 years that we discussed already, we just knocked off 2,000 years by learning Parashat Bereish and Parashat Noach, can be seen as an introduction to Tanakh. And now, with Parashat Lech Lecha, we actually are ready to begin. Lech Lecha takes 24 years, mostly in Eretz Yisrael, with a brief sojourn to Mitzrayim. Avram, at the age of 75, is commanded to go, to leave his home, to travel with Sarah, and who else accompanies him? Lot. Lot is his nephew. According to the Chizkuni, the reason why he takes Lot is because he feels responsible for Lot. There is a well-known midrash that Avraham was taken by his own father to Nimrod, being accused of being a cursed monotheist. How dare he? And Nimrod said, all right, give you one last chance to bow down to Avodah Zarah. Avraham refuses to throw into the Kibshan HaEsh. And his brother Haran is with him. And Haran is then given the same, Test? Okay. He says, okay, you can bow down to this and live or be thrown into the Kibshan. After he saw that Avraham survived the Kibshan HaEsh, the fiery furnace, Haran says, I'm with Avraham, I'm with the God of Avraham, and he's thrown into the Kibshan HaEsh, and he's burnt to a crisp. See, now Lot is fatherless, and Avraham feels responsibility, and now when he sojourns and he leaves, he goes with Sarah, and he goes with Lot.
Why is he killed?
All right, I'm going to talk about that some other time, not right now. Next time I speak on a Thursday night, I'm going to talk about that. Okay, because that's the question. It was the right answer, right? Okay, we'll get to that. Avram travels to Eretz Yisrael. He makes his way all the way to Shechem, and he has his first vision of Hashem. The Arachayim HaKadosh, Rabina speaks about on Thursday evenings, Arachayim HaKadosh, he points out something so interesting. Avram only hears HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Chutz Laretz, but he sees HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Eretz Yisrael, right? He heard Lech Lecha Me'artecha. Yes, Eretz Yisrael he sees. And the Kuzari goes one step further. You know, the Kuzari predates him. But the Kuzari says, in the Talmud Bavli, whenever we introduce something from the period of the Tanayim, we say, Toshma, come and hear. In the Talmud Yerushalmi, anyone know what it says? Tachazi, come and see. So Eretz Yisrael, seeing is believing. Right? Chutz Laretz, we can hear. Eretz Yisrael, we actually see. It's one level higher. Okay, Matan's smiling because he's waiting for that one Zionistic push. I'm sure I'll say more. But no, that was one. That was just one of them. God says, this land will be for your descendants. And he builds a Mizbeach. He travels south from Shechem to Beit El. And he builds a Mizbeach. And he continues further south. Now, famine forces him to Egypt. And out of fear of death, what does he say about his relationship with his wife, Sarah? That she is his sister. We'll come back to that. We'll just summarize here. Paro, because she is his sister, gives him gifts, which is what Avram expected. Said, it'll be good for me. The gifts include cattle and servants. And then plague hits Paro's house. And he forces Sarah to reveal her identity, feeling that it had something to do with that. When she tells him who she is in relation to Avram, Paro takes umbrage with the way that Avram acted, and he sends him away. Now he returns to Eretz Yisrael with great wealth. Avram's first nisayon. What's nisayon? Test. Okay. I mentioned to some other shiurim today, nisayon also can mean something else. What is a nes?
Miracle.
What else could a nes be? Anyone think about what they say when they say Shemona Esrei? Tekab b'shofar. Good, a banner. San nes lekabes kuliyasein. Right? Wave the banner. Every time that Avraham had a test, it wasn't because HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't know if he would pass. It was to wave a banner to show Avram and others what he's capable of. So Avraham's first test is Lech Lecha, and his last test is also Lech Lecha. And that Lech Lecha is for Akedat Yitzchak. And when you read the two psukim, it's so similar, the cadence is the same. So in our parsha, it says Lech Lecha mi'artzecha u'mi'oladecha u'mi'beit avicha. And in the next parsha it says, Kachna et bincha et yechidcha asher ahavta. Okay? There's the Lech Lecha to leave and come to Eretz Israel, and there's the Lech Lecha with the Akedah. Now, why doesn't Hashem, when telling Avraham to leave, he's leaving his comfort zone, why doesn't he tell him where to go? Right? One would think that he should tell him where to go. So, any suggestions? Yeah?
He wants Hashem to have like 100% emunah that he's just going to guide him wherever he is.
Okay, blind faith, he's going to follow God. Wherever you go, I'll follow you. Could be, yes? Could be that the first step is just getting out of a bad environment. Sumera, more important than the destination is the departure. He had to get away from where he was. It's possible. According to Ibn Ezra, he claims that Hashem did tell Avram. That's why he traveled towards Israel. Maybe he could have gone to France. Why did he go to Israel? He went to Israel because that's where he was told. It is a little bit weak because the Pasuk says, you know, to go to the Eretz Asher Ar-Eka, which sounds, that I will show you. And that's why Ibn Ezra is sort of a Das Yachid in this view. But just so you should know, there is a view, and you do have to try to wonder if he wasn't told, why did he travel to Israel? The Ramban suggests that he wasn't told, but Avram continued in the path of his father. If you recall the last class that we had, we said that Terach set out for Eretz Israel. He just didn't make it all the way there. Probably Terach set out for business purposes, but then when he stopped in Haran and he had business purposes there, there was no need for him to continue his journey. But Avram now continued, according to the Ramban, the previously planned journey of his father Terach, and that's why he sets out for Eretz Israel, even though he wasn't told to go there. But he could have potentially, going to Ramban, looked elsewhere as well.
Was Terach and his and Avram's family considered Jews? Like,
I don't want to get into now. There are people that would assume that Avraham was like the first Jew, but I think it makes more sense to say we didn't become Jewish until Matan Torah, we got the Torah. You have to sort of define what is Jewish. To me, Jewish is we accepted the Torah. And if that's true, the first Jew was all that generation at Har Sinai. But Avram is the family that turns into that nation, that Am Skula. Now, according to the Ramban, it's about the journey. It's about the quest for Kedusha. And it's maybe even a test. Will Avraham be able to realize that Eretz Yisrael is different? The same way we know the Midrash that he asked the people that were with him, do you see something by Har Moriah? And they don't, but Yitzchak does. He goes, okay, you guys stay here. And they were able to see that there was something special about Har Moriah. So it could be that according to the Ramban, this was a test. Will he be able to tell that Eretz Yisrael is not like every other land, and he'd be drawn to it, that there is some Kedusha here? Rav Soloveitchik points out an interesting idea. He says, although when entering cities, Avram builds a Mizbeach, he never says in the Pasuk that he brought Karbanot. So now the question would be, so why are you building the Mizbeach? And he wanted to claim that the Mizbeach was to attract the crowd. Avram's point was to try to attract the crowd and to enter into dialogue and to try to convince them about monotheism as opposed to paganism. So he didn't need to bring the Karban. He just needed to have people saying, yo, what are you doing, right? Well, I'm building a Mizbeach, you know, to the one and only God. What do you mean the one and only? Right? So he was able to get into a conversation. And if this is true, Avraham's entire purpose was to attract the crowd so he can preach, how disappointing must it have been to see his own nephew Lot go off to Derech, right? He's like all about this, and then his own flesh and blood is like leaving his chosen path. The Torah prefers to teach us lessons through stories, right? It doesn't have like a Musar Sefer. You know, we can get a Musar Sefer. We can read Mishlei. Mishlei would be a nice Musar Sefer. But we have stories. And we have the story of Avraham coming to his final destination only to find a famine. Like, how bummed out must you be? Right? You're doing this for God. God says, Lech Lecha, and you go. And you leave your whole family. You make it to Eretz Yisrael. I finally made it, right? And I can't live here. And he doesn't lose Emunah. And that is, I think, the lesson learned. You know, Aaron was there this morning, this afternoon. Talking about, like, it's easy to have Emunah when everything's going well. It's much more difficult to have Emunah when you know, life throws you a curveball. Avraham was thrown a curveball. He expected, you know, an unbelievable celebration. Welcome home. You made it, you know, only to find that he can't live there. So he could have lost his Emunah, or he could have said, all right, I'm going to live and rely on a miracle. But instead, he rationally tells himself, I need to do what I need to do and find a place to live. And if it also means I need to tell a half-truth, you know, some sort of white lie that Sarah is my sister, and then Chazal work out how it's not really a total lie because they might be related, because Sarah might be Yiska, and if so, it's his brother's daughter, which is sort of like a sister. So if that's what I need to do in order to stay alive, and not just stay alive, he was saving his wife's life. According to the Mefarshim, in this time, had he showed up there and they desired to take Sarah for the king, they would have just killed Avraham and taken Sarah for the king, raped her, and Avraham would have been dead. With him still being alive, there was at least a chance for him to look out for her, and therefore, saying that he was her sister was not only better for him, but according to the Mefarshim, at least most of the Mefarshim, better for her as well. Right? This is basically the Chizkuni and others. Not everyone agrees. It's important for us to know. The Ramban has no problem calling Avraham out and saying, Avraham chata chet gadol b'shogeg. Okay? It was unwitting. He wasn't planning to sin, but this is wrong. A, according to the Ramban, he never should have left Eretz Yisrael. B, never should have lied about Sarah. And according to the Ramban, this causes galus Mitzrayim. Ramban is harsh. Right? So often, we're used to reading Rashi, which often whitewashes, quotes all the Maimri Chazal that say, no one ever sinned. And so the way we're brought up, just know, you know, probably the second most famous of all the Mefarshim on Chumash, the Ramban, he has no problem several times pointing out what he thinks is a flaw. And here he says, this was a sin. This was a sin. Now, when they return, they come back with wealth. Not just Avraham and Sarah, but Lot as well was given gifts because they were all part of Avraham's family. And Lot has too much wealth. And now a riv breaks out between the shepherds that were headed by Avraham and the shepherds headed by Lot. And what's a riv? A riv is a quarrel. And it's very interesting. Avraham says, let this not turn into a meriva. Let this not turn into long-lasting feud, some family feud that goes on for generations where the people don't even remember what they're fighting about. So he says, all right, you know, you go your way, I'll go mine. What did Avraham say? Who remembers the pasuk? He says to him, you go right, I'll go left. You go left, I'll go right. Which way did Lot go? Did he go right or left? And the answer is none of the above. Why? Because we're not really thinking the way we should. In Tanakh, right and left have certain directions. Okay? In the ancient times, ancient maps, their maps did not look like ours. In their map, the top of the map was east, where the sun rose. So if I'm looking east, which way is right? South. And which way is left? North. If you look at Targum Unklus on that pasuk where it says Yaminu Smol, he talks about south and north. And if that's true, and I never paid attention until someone pointed this out, Lot went east. So he really did not go either, in either direction that he was given. So now the question would be, why did Avram tell him to go north or south, and why does he go east? So north and south are both in the mountainous regions. And Avram wanted Lot to feel the need to daven. If you live in the mountainous areas, you need to daven for rainfall. Without rainfall, nothing's going to grow. But at the time of Avram, stone, that was as lush as Mitzrayim that had the Nile. Okay, right now, what we call the Dead Sea, it wasn't salty. And it was a beautiful place to live. And everything grew there. And you didn't need rain. So Avram wanted him to stay in the mountainous areas, north or south. And Lot chose to go to stone. Even though, we're told, Rishayim lived there. He decided that's where he wanted to live. After Lot leaves, God appears to Avram. Because I'll point out, all the while that Lot was around, God didn't feel like talking to Avram. Okay? Needed to be surrounded by tzaddikim. I guess Lot was bringing down the ruchnius level. Lot leaves, God now speaks to him. And he reiterates to him that this land will be yours for your children. Travel the land. And when he travels the land, he acquires the land. It's like chazakah, ownership through chazakah. He makes a kinyan chazakah by traveling through the land. He settles in Hebron, and he's there for the next 25 years. This departure of Lot explains a later pasuk that always had bothered me. We know that by the Brit Ben Abatarim, which I'll talk about soon, God says to Avram, you're going to be a great nation. And Avram says, really? Through who? Through my servant Eliezer? And that's when Avram says, I've got no kids. What kind of great nation can I be without children? He says, through my servant Eliezer? And God says, no, you can have your own kids. So the question that bothered me is, if you're going to look somewhere, why not look in your family and say, through my nephew? But once Lot chose to go to stone, he wrote himself out of the family business. You chose the lush gardens of stone over communication with God, you're out. And that's why he wasn't even a Havamina when we get to the Brit Ben Abatarim. We then have the First World War. First World War between the four kings and the five kings. Now what happened? This is what happened. This is what you need to know. The four kings lived in the area of Bavel, and they ruled over the five kings that lived in Canaan. And this went on for 12 years. In the 13th year, the five rebel kings said, no taxation without rent. No, I'm sorry. They didn't say that. They said, that was for the Americans. British didn't get that. Okay. In year 13, the four kings send, the five kings from Canaan, the five kings rebel. So we're not going to pay taxes to you. We're not going to be subservient to. So the four kings send an army to teach them a lesson. So they travel from Babel to Eretz Israel, and we have the First World War. And the four kings defeat the five kings, and they begin their return to Babel with spoils of war and prisoners of war. When Avram is told that his nephew Lot is one of those prisoners of war, he goes with his 318 men and this alliance that he made with people named Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, and they go to try to rescue Lot. They pursue them. They catch up to this army. They're already out of Israel. They're in Damascus. They catch up to them, and they successfully defeat them. And they rescue Lot and the other prisoners of war, and they bring them and the spoils back. The king of stone now goes out to greet them, as does Malchit Tzedek, who is the Melech of Shalem. According to Chazal, Shalem, according to Onkel, Shalem is what city? Yerushalayim. Okay? So the king of stone comes out, as is Malchit Tzedek. According to Chazal, Malchit Tzedek is none other than Shem. Last week we spoke about overlaps. Shem, the son of Noah, is alive at this time with Avram. And Shem is Malchit Tzedek according to Chazal.
Do you believe that?
I mean, the idea is that it says that he was the Kohen Gadol Lemelech Elyon. that he believed in the one God. Since everyone was basically pagans, so who would still believe in the one God? It would make sense. It would be Noah's son who was saved by God. It was a relationship. I assume that's where Chazal gets it from. Shem was the one that saved, and that's where we come from. We are Jews from Shem. Okay? Semites is Shem. What? Shem, Ham, and Yafet. Shem, we said, is from Asia. Yafet is in Europe, and Ham is in Africa. Okay. Now, okay. And they offer gifts. The king of stone says, keep the spoils and just give me the people. And Avram says, Chas v'shalom, am I going to keep the spoils? I don't want anyone to say the king of Sodom made me rich. He says, the only spoils I'll keep are for my soldiers and my comrades, Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, because the way that war worked back then is that soldiers were promised the spoils of war. They didn't have a salary. Why would I go and fight? I get to keep the spoils of war. So this is proper reward for the people that risked their lives. They came, I will give them, but I'm not going to keep anything else. I'll give you back all your spoils. Now, the question is, why does he say to Stone, I don't want to keep the spoils? But when Paro, you know, one parak earlier said, you know, here's cattle, here's Avadim. Why did Avram accept it then? Any suggestions? So the idea that I saw that I liked, I think the Chuskuni says this, is, oh, the Radak says it, because by Paro it was a gift. And it would have been rude to refuse the gift of Paro. Over here, this is like a business thing. Oh, you went and did this? Okay, take this as payment. You'll give us... So I don't need your money. But like you should know, in Michtam Eliyahu, we have in the yeshiva, we have an English Strive for Truth. He has a whole section called Kuntres Netila V'Netina. Talking about the importance of being a giver and not a taker. But he talks about sometimes it's important to receive. Not take, but receive. Let's say, for example, your grandparents come and they brought you a present. You want to be a tzaddik. No, I don't want to take it. That would be rude. Right? Your grandparents want to give you that gift. For you to say, oh, sone matanos yechye, I don't want to accept your gift. You know, like right now, by telling your grandmother no, she'll be insulted. So here as well, sometimes you have to realize this person now is being polite and giving you a gift. You accept the gift. Whether you need it or not, you accept the gift. But here is more like a business thing. I'll take this as your payment. He goes, I don't want anyone to say you made me rich. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out something so interesting. Listen to this idea. You listening to this? It's so cool. We have this battle between the four kings and the five kings. Who should be favored? Okay. The five kings for two reasons. One, it sounds like five should be more than four. Not necessarily, you know, depending on their size of the army. But the four kings have the knowledge of the geography. Whenever you know, you're fighting in your land, you have the knowledge of the topography, you know where there are caves, where there's resources, where there's water, you have an advantage over an invading army, right? I mean, look right now, how Ukraine's turning the tables a little bit on Russia. Russia's obviously a stronger, bigger army, but like the topography helps. So the four kings should have won, and yet they didn't. The five kings living in Canaan should have beat the four kings that were sending just representative armies. Here it is. You're fighting for your life, right? You have resources of everybody here, not just the armies that traveled. How come the four kings won? Rav Soloveitchik said the four kings from Bavel goes back to Migdal Bavel. Migdal Bavel, what's it all about? Power. We want to make a name for ourselves. So they had a quest for power. If you want power, so then you have discipline. But the five kings in Canaan, they're living here in stone. What did they want? They had a quest for lust. They just wanted pleasure. So power breeds discipline. Lust breeds decadence. And they're soft, undisciplined soldiers. And when they lost either the first or the second or the third battle, they just said, all right, we give up. You know, like, okay, wave the white flag. They weren't ready to fight for it. They weren't disciplined. Okay? What are you made of? And the people there, they were creatures of comfort, and fighting wasn't really in their blood. Interesting analysis. Lots to say about that. I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to hint to Matan and things like that. Okay, now, soon after, God appears to Avram, and Avram has a vision, this Brit Ben Abitarim, right? All the first try to figure out, was it real? Was it a vision? It seems like it's night. It seems like a day. Part of it a dream, not part of a dream. Lots of different opinions. But whatever the vision is that he saw, whether it was real or in a dream, he is told to take three calves and three goats and two birds, to split the non-birds in half and put everything in a row. Then he sees in this vision, again, whether it was live or in a dream, a smoking furnace and a flaming torch that passes through. And God makes a covenant with Avram that he will have descendants like the stars and like the dust of the ground. The Gemara Megillah says, if we are worthy, we're going to be learning Megillah after Pesach, if we are worthy, we'll be higher than the stars in the sky. And if not, we'll be trampled like the dust of the earth. And we'll inherit the land. But first, Ger Yezarecha Be'eretz Lo Lehem. What does that mean? We'll be foreigners in a strange land for 400 years. Okay, when that count starts from, not so clear. But this is what it's told. It's not going to happen right away. There's going to be a difficult time before that. But eventually, we're going to come in. And then, you know, the oppressors of your descendants will be judged. And we will leave. Your descendants, we will leave. Am Yisrael will leave. And we'll make our way back to Eretz Yisrael. And we'll leave with great wealth. The boundaries of Eretz Yisrael will be from the Nile to the Euphrates. The ideal boundaries, right? If you anyone asks you what are the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, you have to ask, like, it depends where you're looking. Chumash Bereishis, these are the boundaries. Okay? Greater Israel. Okay? From the Nile, like by Egypt, all the way to the Euphrates. And these ideal boundaries were in the time of Shlomo Melech, and according to Chazal, will be again in the time of Mashiach. 10 years go by, and Sarah says to Avraham, look, you told me about the Brit Ben Abitarim, but I don't see it happening with us. So take Hagar, and I guess the idea is for you to continue the next generation through Hagar, you know, my maidservant. Now, this is what you need to know. Anyone ever hear of the Code of Hammurabi? Code of Hammurabi, or Code of Hammurabi, it's not clear, is an ancient code that goes back to the time of Avram Avinu. Some people want to suggest one of those four kings from Bavel is named Amraphel, that is Hammurabi. Okay? And this is ancient code. This is what it says. This was the Minag HaMakom. This is what you need to know. This is the Minag HaMakom at that time. States, a wife can give her shifcha, her maidservant, to her husband, if she is childless. If her husband himself is a free man, and he takes this shifcha as a wife, she and the child go free. But if she acts with chutzpah to her mistress, the woman who she was serving before, then wife number one can punish wife number two and send her back to slavery. Is exactly what it says. And if so, all of a sudden these psukim seem so clear. It's exactly what transpires. It fits perfectly with the psukim. Hagar gets pregnant. Sarah feels disrespected by Hagar and goes to Avram, who says, look, it's your call. What do you mean, look, it's your call? Because that's the law. That was the law. It's your call. And she kicks her out. Now, what does it mean Sarah mistreats her and Hagar runs away? So Rav Yaakov Meidan, who I quoted last week, has an interesting idea. It's sort of difficult for us with our image of Avraham and Sarah to assume that Sarah mistreated her, and that's why Hagar runs away. Right? Like, Sarah would mistreat somebody. Rav Yaakov Midan wanted to suggest as follows. Sarah felt disrespected. Why? It could be that now Hagar was pregnant, and every so often Hagar was like asking Sarah, she's like, oh, can you do me a favor, give me that pillow from over there? And like Sarah was like, what? That's like your job for me. Like, I'm running and fetching. Oh, could you just give me a cup of water? Like, and she didn't mean to disrespect Sarah, but she felt slighted. Okay, this is where Rav Meidan said. Rav Ari Levine, you've heard the name? From A Tzaddik in Our Time. You ever heard of the book A Tzaddik in Our Time? We have it over there. Very worthwhile to read. Rav Ari Levine, he thinks that Sarah wouldn't even have done that. He feels that rather Sarah continued to treat Hagar the way she always did, but now that Hagar was pregnant, she felt that she was being mistreated. So before, she might have asked Hagar, could you straighten up the house and make dinner? And now Hagar like felt, what? And you see, I'm pregnant, and she felt mistreated. And therefore, you know, this is Hagar's feeling. She's mistreated, and she runs away. When Hagar runs away, an angel appears and tells her she will have a son, Yishmael, and she should go back, and he is born when Abraham is 86 years old. At the age of 99, God tells Avram to have a bris milah, to change his name from Avram to Avraham, and Sarai now has her name changed to Sarah as well. And b'schus this and the bris, you will inherit Eretz Yisrael. Now this was already said, so Radak says, I don't get it. It was already said by the bris ben b'sarim. Now why is it being repeated? Says Radak, this is important for us, even when your brethren, your descendants, will be forced to leave Eretz Israel, this numerous is telling you, you'll be able to come back. Okay. God says that Sarah will give birth. Avram is overjoyed, blown away, because he says, what? By the time Sarah gets pregnant now, she has a kid, she's going to be 90, and I'm going to be 100. And he says, God, you're like too good. Halavai Yishmael just grows up. I don't need another kid. And God says, no, Yishmael will be a great nation, but Yitzchak is going to be your son, and he will be your legacy. Right? He then gave a bris to Yishmael and his household, whoever those people were that were, maybe the 318 soldiers that he had there, and himself at the age of 99. This is how Lech Lecha ends. Okay, they're in Eretz Israel. We'll pick it up, Bezrat Hashem, next time, continuation of our story. Okay, Shkoyach, guys.